Welcome to the Tech Flash. If you're looking to increase your ed tech knowledge that's quick and easy to listen to, you have come to the right place. Let's join our host Josh and see what today's episode is all about. Hello and welcome to the Tech Flush. So we're going to start this episode just a little different. We had a big show for you, episode number 31. We had a special guest, Adam Spark from Short Answer. Phenomenal show, but if we're going to be honest with each other, I missed a button. So I've had to work really hard. Well, I didn't really do a whole bunch. My boy Colby Burris, you remember, you can follow him at @xlessCBurris, but he did some editing for me, really helped out, phenomenal guy, and I cannot say enough good things about him. So for this episode, you may hear a little popping, you may hear a little differentiating in the sounds, but it's a really good conversation with Adam Spark from Short Answer. So check it out. I hope you enjoy it. And we're going to hit a little theme music before that starts, but just wanted to give you some upfront news about what's going on. So hope you enjoy episode number 31. Check it out. Before we get started, Adam, just for our new listeners, old listeners, listeners in general, just kind of give us a quick rundown, quick introduction of you, and kind of what you do, or any information in between that.
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Adam Sparks. I was a classroom teacher for the last 7 years, mostly in Nebraska, where I'm from, but also taught in China for a year. I taught in Chicago for a couple years. And I just finished my master's in learning design and technology at Stanford, where my work focused on writing instruction and I guess the intersection of writing instruction, formative assessment, and peer feedback. And all of that work led to Short Answer, which was supposed to be a capstone project for my master's and became a startup. We got some grant funding and launched it about a year ago. And so I'm now the co-founder and CEO of Short Answer. It's a gamified writing platform for K-12, built around supporting cross-curricular writing and just helping kids fall in love with writing through gamified social writing experiences. So. Super excited to talk about that work and anything else with you today.
And listen, congratulations on graduating. You know, last time we talked, you were going through that process, so that's big time. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. It's funny because I'm building a Short Answer with my wife, Alexa. So I graduated, and then with the plans of moving back to Nebraska, that's kind of where we operate out of. That's where I'm from. And like 6 months later, she got into Stanford. So now we're back on campus and we've just been ping ponging across the country. But it's been super fun to build it with her.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know there's been some times in the district that I work in, me and my wife has kind of worked together at the middle school here. And it was really fun just to be at work together, kind of see each other during the day and those type of things. So I'm sure that's a fun aspect of not just building Short Answer, but also being at Stanford and all those kind of
things. Yeah, I think it's great. Like, people are always like, oh man, how could you build a company with your wife? That sounds stressful. It's fantastic. Like, we used to live in separate worlds, and I know you know this as an educator, but like, it's so stressful. I would come home and just be living in a completely different world than the world she was living on a day-to-day basis as a software developer. So I've really enjoyed being able to work with my wife. It's been fantastic.
Well, before we get into the Short Answer, you've already hit, you know, gamified writing for any subject. And that's really been like when you talk about any subject, like, I understand that you can use it for everything. But it really is for any subject. And I love that part of Short Answer. Some of my favorite key features, Adam, I just love that it's student writing, especially of AI. I mean, I can go to ChatGPT, here's my paper, you know, I can edit a little bit and turn it in, but I really haven't done anything. And so I love that aspect of it. I love that it's peer reviewed. I think of myself as, I'm not really a reader. I'm not really one that's going to read a manual on how to do something. I really need you to sit down with me and show it to me. Show me the process to writing or whatever that may be. I can take it and I can run with it and I can really learn from that. And so to me, the peer review to this whole program, I think it's phenomenal.
Hey, thank you. And I think that's been one of our, you kind of touched on several insights. I think one of them is creating an authentic audience for student work is super important with writing, because writing is incredibly challenging, and because of that, it's incredibly frustrating for kids. Like, oftentimes, kids will quote unquote get stuck when they're learning how to write and trying to just get words on the paper. And what we found, and I think an insight for us, is just, yeah, like creating a social experience where the things kids are creating, they're immediately sharing with their classmates, is super motivating for kids. And it's also super valuable for their learning, because then they get to see multiple different exemplars from classmates. And a comment we hear a lot from kids is like, I know what I need to do now because I saw examples from my classmates. So that, I think that's been an insight for us. And then another thing you touched on there was, short answer from the start, has been built to be cross-curricular. A frustration for me, I used to teach English and social studies, and it's been my experience that generally writing tools tend to be built for English teachers. And that makes a whole lot of sense. But at the same time, like, what works specifically for an English teacher may not work in a math classroom or in a science classroom or electives classroom. So they kind of need different, you know, if you're going to ask those teachers to embed writing in their practice, it needs to be simple and fun and something the kids enjoy doing. And so I think, you know, our goal is cross-curricular writing. We certainly don't want to add one more thing to teachers' plates, especially now. So I think that's been an insight for us too, is like building a writing tool that's not necessarily built only for English teachers. And yeah, I mean, the results have spoken for themselves. Like, we've gotten really great feedback from teachers, and we're excited to continue
to talk about just cross-curricular. Like, for math, for me, just to be honest, sometimes it's hard to come up with things. And so in preparation for our talk today, I'm digging through your website, you know, all the resources, which I'm sure we'll hit later. But I was looking through the math part of it, and the examples that you give there are really awesome. And I can't remember, I could not find it again, but there was student work in short answer with math. And it was just phenomenal to see that work, whether it was, you know, they're putting in their numbers and here's my math problem and here's my answer. And now students are done. So one prompt that I found from one of your resources, it was, without solving a problem, explain how you would find the area of a pie with a diameter of 8 inches. And I think that's huge, because now you're building on just not writing, but now you've got that communication piece in there and really getting thoughts out.
Yeah, and you're assessing math in a unique way. I will be honest with you, when we go around and lead professional development, I say kids should be doing writing practice in math classrooms, I get eye rolls from the math teachers. And I understand that reaction. Like, teachers already have way too much on their plate, so asking them to do one more thing is frustrating and exhausting. But I think the example you just gave is a perfect example of how you don't have to do one more thing. You can embed writing and just, you know, teach kids your content through the medium of writing. So yeah, like, give them a math problem and then have them, instead of doing the math problem like they normally would, have them explain the process of how to solve it. Or another example I've seen is a teacher will upload a picture of an incorrectly worked problem, and it's the student's job to, in writing, explain what's incorrect about it, and then explain how they would fix it, or explain how they would, you know, explain it to a peer or something like that. And then the kids provide feedback on each other's explanations on how they would fix it. So it's a really, you're getting kids writing in math, but you're also assessing really a higher order thinking skills of analyzing, evaluating different math processes. So I think it's, you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. You're getting kids writing and improving their writing practice across the curriculum, but you're also, I think, assessing student understanding at a higher level and challenging students. And I think in a unique way relative to how often, you know, math is being assessed, which is typically just solving math problems.
With all the resources that we have, from AI to processes, are huge, and being able to communicate that is really like a new, I don't know if this is even correct, but like a new generational thing versus to like in school or you were in school. It's just, we're really changing the way what we're thinking and creating.
Yeah, I think it's just a practical reality of living in a world, like you said, with artificial intelligence, where once classwork leaves the classroom, there's really no reliable way of knowing how much of an influence AI is having on that student's process. So, you know, the traditional way we've done homework, and I'm to be transparent here, I'm kind of parroting. So about a couple weeks ago, we put on a webinar with Dr. Dylan William, who, for my money, is one of the godfathers in modern K-12 assessment, and he talked about this concept. So I'm kind of parroting him here. But he talked about how we need to move away from what we've traditionally done, which is like students create artifacts of their learning outside of the classroom, and they bring it back in, and then we assess those artifacts. And we need to transition it towards bringing more, maybe, of the instruction and learning outside of the classroom, and then we do the assessment of understanding in the classroom where we can better monitor student understanding. And, you know, I think that that's a heck of a lot easier if you're teaching social studies or science or math or things where in-class assessment makes sense because you can do assessments in, like, you know, 5 to 10 question quizzes or short answer questions or whatever. But when it comes to writing instruction, it's a heck of a lot more challenging because traditionally that's been something where kids necessarily need to take that out of the classroom because it takes a long time to write a, you know, 5 to 10 page research paper. So I think that's been another insight for us when it, you know, you're talking about adjustments to assessment. How do we bring more writing instruction back into the classroom where we do have better control over how much of an influence AI is having? I think an insight with short answer has been, well, let's do more short form in class writing.
Yeah, because even when you think about just the contents that we're teaching students, writing is something that's going to stay with you your whole life. Like, you're going to have to, whether it's a text message or an email, and yes, we do, like, you know, short texts in here and abbreviations when we do things. But eventually, you know, I have to text my boss, and I want to make sure it sounds the right way. It reads the right way. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, lack of a better term, I'm a goober, and I just don't know what I'm doing. It's a huge part of what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, the thing I think about the most is I think a lot of writing is going to be automated away. I think we're already seeing this, but AI is being embedded in email. It's being embedded in Google Docs and Microsoft Word. It's going to be in whatever text messaging platform you live in. And so I just see all of that adding up to students getting less independent practice at writing, not just in the classroom, but in like their day-to-day lives. And I worry about what that might mean for literacy, because I think it's fair to assume the less you practice something, the worse you're going to get at it. So I think we're going to need to find ways in K-12 to make up for those lost reps, so to speak. And I think the best way to do that is to embed writing across the curriculum. So I don't think writing instruction can just fall on the English teacher anymore. It needs to be cross-curricular. And I'm not the only person saying this. Like, writing across the curriculum has been known to be one of the best interventions for improving school-wide literacy for 30 years. And there's entire organizations built around just supporting writing across the curriculum. It's just that I think traditionally writing tools have, again, been built for writing teachers, quote-unquote, which are English teachers. But
yeah, and I think you're doing a phenomenal job just tying all those things in. And I know, like, you're traveling around, you're doing all these things, you're speaking. And what I love about seeing your speaking engagements or the things you put on social media or you're posting on your website, it's really backed by research. And, you know, most programs that I've seen or I'm using, I don't see them sharing a lot of the research they've done. You and your wife and all the people that support you at Short Answer are doing this. And I know y'all just put out a case study that came out in June. And so, like, walk us through that process of your case study and what did you kind of come up with?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts here, so you might have to cut me off. I think that EdTech efficacy, does your product actually drive learning outcomes, is something that is massively, I don't know if underrated is the right word. It's just, it's not given enough attention right now. Especially as there's been this huge boom in new AI tools that are, you know, it seems like there's a new AI tool for learning literally every day coming out, partly because of the efficiency afforded by AI. But it's been a little frustrating for me as someone who, like, we built our theory of change for Short Answer before we built Short Answer. And so for context, the theory of change is just, you know, what is the specific learning outcome that you want to improve? What does the research say is the best way to get to that learning outcome? And how is your tool going to facilitate that research? And if you go to myshortanswer.com and click on the Our Approach tab at the top, we have our theory of change listed right there. And so you asked about the case study. The case study that we just put out, which is based on interviews and surveys, net promoter score things that we embedded in our app over the course of last year, that's our first step in really beginning to measure our efficacy of Short Answer over time. So if you go to our website, again, on our approach page, you can see what we're calling our portfolio of efficacy. And I think that's an important insight for us. So we plan to measure our impact on learning over time and in different contexts. That's been another frustrating thing. I think that's the best way for tools to measure the impact that they're having in classrooms, because K-12 education is so hard to measure efficacy, because in education, everything works somewhere and nothing works everywhere. And so I think our best shot at measuring, are we actually improving writing outcomes and literacy outcomes for schools, is to measure it over time and in different contexts. So yeah, we put out the case study for last year. This year, we've already started to work on measuring, hopefully this year, like student outcomes. Last year, we were focusing on like the teacher learning outcomes using Short Answer. But it's something that we're dedicated to and have been since the conception of Short Answer. And it has been a point of frustration when I look around the ed tech space and I don't see theories of change. I don't see attempts to measure efficacy. And I think just as frustratingly, I don't see teachers and instructional coaches and principals pushing tools to show that efficacy. Like the number one question I get asked from schools in terms of our tool of like, is it working? Is just like, are teachers using it? Because, and I understand that question. Like if you're going to purchase a tool, you want to make sure your teachers are using it. But it seems to me that the only way we're measuring if a product's effective or not at the school level is like, are the teachers using it or not? And if they're not using it, then this is a fail. And if they are using it, then it's a success. Well, I understand practically why that's our focus, but I would love to see a transition to like, instead of just our teachers using it, it's our teachers using it, and is it driving learning outcomes? And so that's why we put together the case study, is to show schools like, yes, here's what we found, both positive and negative, in the way that Short Answer is improving writing outcomes and other learning outcomes for students. And we want to continue to expand on that over time. But it's just something I would love to see more in the edtech space. Because, you know, candidly, I think what I'm seeing right now is like technologists who have no experience in education, either as teachers or you know, whatever in their schoolwork, like building tech tools based on what the technology can do rather than starting from the research or starting from a problem in education and basing their product off of, well, what does educational research say is best practice in solving that problem?
We do tend to push tools at a school and it can do all these things. But then if people aren't going to use it, you know, we're not going to buy it. But I really love that when you said learning outcomes. Is this tool impacting my student learning outcomes? And if only four people are using it in those four classes of students, their outcomes of their learning are increasing and we're seeing that, then the tool is being useful and it's doing what it should do. Instead of like, there's only four teachers using it, we're not going to do that anymore. Because really, you know, in education, we're there to support students. And so now I've got to dive into more of that learning outcome, like what they're using it for, if there's a change in the student.
Yeah, I guess my question for administrators would be, would you rather have a tool and, you know, all 20 of your teachers are using it, but it's not driving any learning outcomes, or a tool where only three or four of your teachers are using it, but it's driving massive learning outcomes? Like, of those two, which one is a success to you or not? And to me, what I'm experiencing right now is administrators would tell you it's the tool that 20 teachers are using is the success because they're using it. And I just think that that's a broken paradigm. Like, I think the tool that is driving actual learning outcomes, even if it's only in 3 to 4 classes.
And you've got some schools that just don't have the funds to do that. That opts that thought process. But, you know, really we're there for trying to figure out their outcomes.
Yeah, and it's really tricky. Like, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like these things are easy, but you know, you talk about funding, like ESSER funding, which is like the federal funding that was made available post-COVID for schools, is just ended in September, or is like ending as we speak. So a lot of schools are under budget crunches and like having to make cuts. And I can totally understand why, you know, if you see a tool's not being used by all your staff members, why you'd want to cut it from your budget. But I would just ask that when you're doing these, like making these calculations, that you consider.
Yeah. And really, like, you know, when we look at outcomes, we're always crunching data. We're seeing what their state test scores, if they pass their reading, and you're looking at all this data and you're driving your instruction through that. But then it comes the other part too, like just a really interesting thought.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It is challenging to measure those outcomes. Like, you know, what are you just going to look at their grades? Are you going to look at test scores? Are you, going to look at performance in the application? You know, we're Short Answer, but you could track progress across any of the ed tech apps.
We're asking students or teachers to change their process for teaching students. So really that comes back to teachers and changing their process and what they're looking for. I don't know, a big switch in how education has always been ran till now, and really changing that mindset. And I don't know if that will change soon. It may change. It might take a while. You'll have all these, you know, students that are going through college to become teachers or do different professions. And it's going to take that group of kids probably to start changing the mindset. Now, listen, also, And I know listening to you and all your engagements, I know you love talking about just the efficacy behind things, the learning outcomes, and really that data that drives what you do to support student learning. But also, when we look at short answer, y'all made some really cool updates.
Yeah, we're in the process of it now. It's been so you know, while we were doing that efficacy case study for last year, we were also kind of the goal there was like 50-50. 50% was efficacy and understanding the learning outcomes our tool is driving, but the other 50% was just like understanding product usage and what we need to change and update and those sorts of things. So we just began pushing out what will be a series of fall updates to Short Answer that are based directly on teacher feedback. So the updates that just went out literally this week were all student facing. So we made some changes to the student experience to just kind of decrease cognitive load for students and create a more focused experience and also increase the simplicity for teachers as a part of that process. It's always stressful, as you know, we're a very small team to push out these changes, because immediately we're swarmed with support tickets and minor bugs that we missed and all sorts of things. So it's been a bit of a stressful week, but I'm super excited to continue to roll out these updates to Short Answer. The core functionality is not changing. We're just expanding. So for example, we're expanding student reflection options in the app.
We're always asking students to reflect on their work or what could you do differently, especially in the county, the district I work in, where, you know, schools are becoming STEM certified across Tennessee and all those things. And really it becomes back to reflection. Like you started this project, it didn't work, so now you've got to go back and reevaluate. And so I love that students are being able to reflect on what they're typing and saying, you know, is this good? Am I rating on a rating scale? And they're being able to process more what they wrote. And then they can go after their peers have reviewed it, and then they're kind of getting both sides of it. That's one of my favorite parts of Short Answer, is just the reflection part.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to the theory of change that I was talking about previously. If you look at our theory of change, one of our stated learning outcomes for students is to improve their metacognition and self-regulated learning skills. And so the reflection piece is huge in that process. So for those listening that have never used Short Answer, students submit responses. Teacher pushes those responses back to the class. The kids provide peer feedback to each other. But then we end the activity with reflection on the feedback received. So, you know, when the students submit their responses, they have to rate their confidence, and then at the end, they have to re-rate their confidence. And so a simple extension with that is just like, okay, your confidence, or did your confidence change? And if so, why? You know, did you become more or less confident after going through this, and why? And just getting kids to reflect on and process that is, I think, super valuable in developing the metacognitive processes and being able to monitor one's own understanding and like know what to do when you don't understand or when you're struggling with something. And like kind of have clear next steps for how to improve your understanding, which I think it's doubly important, kind of going back to the AI question. Something I worry about a lot with AI is students outsourcing their thinking to AI. So a big goal with Short Answer moving forward is like, all right, if you want to use AI in your writing, fine, but like, let's teach kids how to do that. And as a part of that, let's embed reflection into the process of writing, such that if they did use AI in their writing, they're being asked to reflect on how much did it influence their thinking.
Yeah, and even with the reflection, I think sometimes to be in front of your teacher or peers and to reflect on things that you've done, whether it's a lesson plan in the educational setting, whatever you're reflecting on, sometimes it's hard to stand in front of somebody and reflect on what you've done. And so for students to be able to just be at their desk on their, you know, device and reading their past, their what they've written, and being able to reflect before and after and do that independently, I feel like a game changer for students that don't necessarily want to stand in front of the classroom or meet with the teacher. I like that from an internal part of them, and they can change it and kind of see their growth.
Yeah, I think that anonymity piece that comes with that is super important. And I think just giving a space in class to process emotion, especially when it comes to feedback, is so valuable. If you read the research on feedback, one of the major challenges with getting kids to use feedback is that students often will react to feedback emotionally. And that can go any number of ways. It can be positive and like, you know, my answer was the top of the class in Short Answer, so now I'm the best and I don't need to learn anymore. or the opposite of like, oh man, I got some negative feedback, so I'm dumb and this is dumb and I'm not going to work on this anymore. Like emotion is, like feedback is emotional. So creating a space where we can coach kids through all ends of the spectrum of feedback, and like, you know, just very simple, like you know, did you agree with your feedback or not? And talk me through why or why not? And like helping kids process feedback and learn how to give and receive it is a huge goal of Short Answer.
Yeah, we're continuing to change those experiences and change that process for what it is. I think it's just a phenomenal. Before we keep going, I don't know how much you've listened to the show or those type of things, and I think you saw this on the notes, but I don't know if you're really ready for it. We're gonna do something. Are you ready for this? Famous toilet flush. So now, Adam, this is called the Tech Flush Tip of the Day. So we're gonna kind of put you on the spot, and you can talk about something Short Answer-ish. You can talk about something else in the educational space. But when it comes to, I don't know, we're talking about writing and talking about all those things. What's the biggest, or what's a good tip that you would share with teachers in really trying to harness student writing ability?
I mean, my mind goes immediately to just kind of double clicking on something we've already talked about, which is creating an authentic, I think creating experiences for students where they can experience the power of writing is going to be super important moving forward. Especially as we move into this age of AI, where I think motivation to want to learn how to write is going to decrease, given machines can now write for us. I think we need to be super explicit and clear with kids about how important literacy is to their health and well-being as they go through their lives. And I think you can't just tell a kid that it's important. You have to actually let them experience the importance. And I think the best way to do that is to create an authentic audience for student work. You know, in Short Answer, we embed that in the experience by letting them share their writing with their peers. But you don't just have to use Short Answer to create an authentic audience. Another simple thing is, like, whatever your kids are creating in the classroom, find a way to share it with, share it with their parents, share it with their community. I remember in high school, we did it was in 11th grade with Ms. Holman. We did a writing activity where we wrote a letter to the editor of the Omaha World Herald in Omaha, Nebraska. And we actually sent off our letters to the editor, and some of us got published in the Omaha World Herald. I remember this because I was one of those students, and it was like, oh my God, my writing is being read by thousands of people across the state of Nebraska. Look at how powerful this is at communicating, you know, my beliefs or my ideas with the world. I'm 32 years old, and here I am recalling something I did as a 16-year-old. Like, I think creating those experiences for kids are so important in getting them to sort of, I don't know if the word would be accept, but like getting them to believe that writing is worth their time and is super powerful as they go through their lives.
And you're totally right, making that authentic, because I'm going back, like you were talking, going back to when I was in high school, middle school, and the writing that I had to do, we just had to write papers. Like, here's your story, well, here's your process for science, walk me through it. But I think, what if I had the opportunity to write to my paper, write to a congressman, or write to, I don't know, anybody? That would have changed the importance that I felt when I wrote it. It's like, you know, when I type our blurb today that I'm going to put on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those things, I'm really going to be thoughtful in the word choice. I'm really going to be thoughtful in what I put in there, because I know other people around the world are going to read that. And I want it to sound important. I want it to sound, you know, all the things that we want it to look and read like, right? I think if we can really make that for students be authentic and pull in more real world examples like you talked about, especially like when you go back to when you were 16, you're still remembering that. That was impactful. So if we can do that with our low students, our high students, we're gonna really see a movement. Writing really is important, even though you have AI and I can go write you a letter today, Adam, and it really shows it's more important than just going to a tool, getting my writing and sending it. It's just more of that flavor that we're really looking for. Man, that's powerful.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, like sending a letter to a congressman or writing into your paper, that maybe that's a special project. You know, that's a lot of work for a teacher. It's above and beyond. Like, if you're just looking to do this on a day-to-day basis, I think you can tap into students interacting with other students, because arguably that's what kids care most about, is like, what do my classmates think? So yeah, I mean, I think it's a hugely it's an untapped resource, because so many people have, you know, both as students and as teachers, we have negative experiences with peer-to-peer models of instruction, because so often it's you know, frankly, it's the blind leading the blind. Like, they're new to the content. How are they going to provide meaningful feedback? Or you know, creating peer-to-peer sort of instructional experiences has been a challenge. But I think the inside of Sure Answer has been, if we can scaffold it in the right way,
I'm really going to be sharing.
Then yeah, you can create this authentic audience using resources that come into your classroom every day.
Another part, Adam, I really enjoy. I know we're really talking about some good things, but I also want to highlight some things on the website as well. The getting started part, you've got all kinds of resources there for teachers. So, if you're like me and we're struggling with math, right? What kind of prompts could we do with math? What kind of writing? You've got stuff there that teachers can go to and kind of see some example prompts to get that mindset going. It's kind of like what I went back to, the beginning of the show. We talked about on there, about solving the problem, explain how you would find the area of a pie, right? So you've got some really good examples there, and that's set up for all content areas, correct?
Yeah, I mean, so for reference, it's just myshortanswer.com, and there's a tab at the top that says Get Started. You'll click on Teacher Resources. And we've built out tutorials. We've built out Common Core aligned guides for every content area. We've got, over like one pagers for staff, guides to creating good questions and feedback criteria in the platform, example questions, free posters, turnkey lessons. And we have built all of that because, even before we built Short Answer, when I was a teacher, my kind of operating philosophy was like, teachers don't need more tools. They need to know how to use the tools that they have. And so if we're going to introduce another tool into the marketplace for teachers to use, we need to be very intentional about showing them how they can use this. So we've had these resources almost like before Short Answer was even a product, because we wanted to be very intentional.
And you were talking about just how to write and things that they can do. It made me click to remember when I went through your ambassador program, and I actually have the chart there, and you've got your analyze, synthesis, factual, and prediction, and like some keywords around it, and really just fostering how to create those prompts to where students are doing that higher level thinking to create higher level writing. And so I really, out there in podcast land, y'all really need to go check that out. Adam, you and your team, your wife, everybody's just done a really good job of setting this up, because it's just not a tool, it's a process. We're really harnessing the writing process and trying to increase that. I love that part of how y'all started this program based off data, based off your research, and then here's my problem. Really different about y'all.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I'm glad, again, one more thing, because you previously talked about updates coming to the platform. Something that we were really intentional about in the updates was taking some of these resources that live on the teacher resources page and just embedding them into the experience in Short Answer. We want to be much more intentional in this new update about doubling down on the pedagogy that we're promoting and just making our pedagogy a lot more explicit throughout the application. Because what we found, frankly, is like if the sort of valuable walkthroughs of the tool are living on the teacher resources tab and teachers have to go to the separate space and read these separate documents, they're just not going to do it. So we want to just embed it into the experience to make it easier for teachers, but also to improve the fidelity of implementation in the classroom. So I'm super, super excited. That hasn't really gone live yet because we've only pushed the student updates. But when we push the teacher updates, it's going to be a lot more intentional about walking teachers through.
And I can't wait to see that. That's going to be awesome. Because now, all right, I'm stuck with what I want to write. Now I have, like you said, now I have to go to another page. But if it's just right there living, man, they're really going to foster some creativity with teachers and connecting those prompts to higher level things, man. I'm really looking forward to that update and getting that email when that's coming out. I love that. And another thing that I love about Short Answer is under the Getting Started page, you have those PD and workshops that you offer. Just talking to you the little bit that we've talked in person and like the emails and just really diving into your program, that it's just not, hey, here's our tool, how to use it. You really are offering on your PD, it talks about you're defining problems, you're learning your research, your outcomes. You're really sitting down and practicing and coaching teachers, educators, on not just Short Answer, but your true goal, and I know we can assume that based off our conversation, but your true goal is to help educators with writing and help students become better writers. And I love that you're offering jobs instead of just say, here's your workshop to learn your program. No, no, let's set up a one-on-one coaching session to talk writing and how we can really impact that.
Yeah, I think our approach at Short Answer to workshops is very different from other platforms, and maybe in a way confusing because of that, because our workshops aren't just about short answers. Our workshops focus on how do we adjust writing instruction for the age of AI broadly. So they're full half-day workshops where we spend some time talking about short answer, but the workshops themselves are about a larger framework for the whole kit and caboodle when it comes to writing instruction. And so I think we bring a unique lens to it. I taught for 7 years, and I kind of bring the pedagogy experience, but I also co-created the workshop with my wife, who currently studies data science at Stanford, which, I mean, a translation, she studies artificial intelligence at Stanford, so she focuses on natural language processing and machine learning and a lot of the underlying technology that's driving new generative AI tools. So I think we bring a unique lens to it because she's got the technological understanding and I've got the pedagogy. And the feedback on our workshops has been outstanding. We kind of developed this 5-point framework for adjusting writing instruction, a lot of which we've already talked about today. Like a huge part of it is helping teachers bring more writing instruction back into the classroom in effective ways where they can better monitor and control AI's influence on student writing. So, it's been super exciting. It's been something kind of unexpected. It's kind of just grown organically from some of the presentations we've led at conferences. One of the joys of Short Answer has been all the places that's taken us that we would never have been able to go. Like literally yesterday, we won a grant, super excited about it. And as a part of that grant process, the acceptance ceremony was at the top of the new World Trade Center in New York City. So, you know, yesterday we were at the top of the World Trade Center in New York City. And then on Monday this week, we're going out to Hays, Kansas to lead our AI and writing workshop. So like I said, like Short Answer was supposed to be a master's project and it became something much more. It's been a totally unexpected journey. And
well, I hope you've enjoyed episode number 31 with Adam Spark. Again, I do apologize for the audio, a little bit of editing, but again, shout out to my boy Colby Burris, did a phenomenal job with it, so I hope you enjoyed episode number 31. Now, before we wrap up for today, just remember, you can follow Adam on Twitter at Mr. Spark. You can follow him on Twitter as well for Short Answer at MyShortAnswer. And then also check out the website, MyShortAnswer.com. And Adam says they have a TikTok, similar things at MyShortAnswer. So check those out. Check all their updates. And seriously, Adam's a phenomenal guy. Really enjoy sitting down and talking with him, not just about his program, but where his heart is with writing and what's really at stake here in this new generation that we're dealing with, we're going through. So make sure you follow him, stay in touch with that. Now remember, you can follow me at Josh_Moore65. You can follow the show on Apple, Spotify, all that kind of good stuff. And listen, seriously, make sure you check out the bcstechnology.org website. There are all kinds of things happening. I mean, it is unreal what's going on. So check it out. Really cool updates, articles, podcasts, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. So until next time, I hope y'all still stay tuning in. Episode number 32 is going to be wild. Got some really good, another good guest on there. Some good stuff coming. So I hope y'all enjoyed episode number 31. And until next time, we'll catch you later. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Tech Flush podcast. Stay tech savvy, keep those gadgets charged, and remember, teachers and technology go hand in hand, connecting students to a world of knowledge for an electrifying learning experience. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about the Tech Flush to your friends. Catch all episodes on Apple Podcasts. See you next time on the Tech Flush.